Hey guys, Michael here with WeddingVideographySchool.com. Hope you guys are having a great week. I know I am. Man, it's just been crazy busy around here. So I've actually had a couple podcast recordings in the can and just haven't been able to find the time to get those up and online for you guys. So I apologize for the delay there. But like I said, it's been crazy busy shooting weddings every single weekend, sometimes two at a time. And I'm actually, after I'm done uploading this podcast today, I'll be headed up to Beaver Creek, Colorado for another wedding up there. So the next 24 hours will be extremely busy once again, but so is the life of a wedding videographer, I suppose. So anyway, before I jump into today's show, I want to encourage you guys, if you haven't yet, to please leave a review for Wedding Videography School podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast. Just rate and review. It really, really, really helps the show. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe as well. That way you don't have to wonder if there's a new episode. You'll just get an alert on your phone. Today's episode, I'm interviewing Denny Kremblis, a wedding videographer from Buffalo, New York, who made his way out to Colorado about 4 or 5 years ago, and that's how I met him, and he worked alongside me for a little bit, and now he's in New York doing his own thing and really making a lasting impression out there, as well as doing some really creative stuff on the side as well. So hopefully you guys will enjoy my interview with Denny. Hey, Denny, man, it's good to have you on the podcast today. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you and I met, it was like 4 years ago or something. I don't remember exactly when you came out to Colorado, but you hit me up and we went out to lunch and you shot some weddings with me after that and even went out and shot a couple weddings on your own, and it was awesome, man.
That whole experience was really really great. I learned a lot from it, and if I hadn't met you like I did, I feel like my development would have been a little bit, you know, sustained. You definitely showed me a lot of cool things, and even some of the people you introduced me to showed me some cool stuff. So all in all, that trip out there and living out there for the year that I did, it was great.
Yeah, man. Well, I appreciate that, but you definitely have a natural talent for video stuff, man, and pretty much anything creative. You definitely have a creative mind, and so it's been cool to watch what you've been doing, and I've been watching some of your videos on Instagram lately. You can tell everybody your Instagram handle a little bit later, but just you playing accordion and like it seems like you do it all, man. You're a wedding videographer entrepreneur, but also like a pretty badass accordion player, which badass and accordion is never two words that I thought I'd put in the same sentence, but
There's not too many people out there trying to make it cool. You got Weird Al and Steve Urkel, and
you know, yeah, that's what been, I was thinking. I was thinking about Steve
those
Urkel.
Have been like the two like front runners of the accordion, and you know, nobody in American culture has made it cool yet. So you know, by doing like, you know, viral videos and, you know, pop content. I'm just sort of trying to just make it relevant and make it cool and fun, and I'm having a lot of fun doing it.
Well, awesome, man. Yeah, the Post Malone accordion videos, Denny will give you guys an Instagram handle later to check out, but those are some of my favorites. So well, cool, man. Tell me a little bit how you got started in wedding videography, and like what was your first experience, and how did you know that you kind of wanted to pursue that further?
Well, weddings was one of the very first like professional experiences I had, and not so much in the sense of like it was my first step into like the professional realm. Like as soon as I started doing an internship, I started doing weddings, and I started when I was 18, right out of high school. I started with a guy here in Buffalo, and he would bring me along, and I just sort of watched him work. But even back then, I mean, that was 13 years ago. Things were very different, and it's just now that everything is so much smaller and quicker, and it allows for like so much more creativity and storytelling and all that. So it's been cool to see like the progression of it, over the last like decade or more. But yeah.
Awesome, man. What would you say like your approach is? So like when you're working with a client, like tell us a little bit about your style and the way you interact with your clients.
As far as the interactions with the clients, I try and find what their needs are. I ask them about some of the films that they've seen in the past, whether it's from me or if it's from somebody else. I always, I'm always open to ideas. But my approach is kind of like the like creative storytelling, and in some cases, depending on the couple, I try and get into that realm of epicness, whether that's like bringing s smoke grenades or confetti cannons, or like a GoPro on a lasso, and like the whole like bullet time 360 thing. Like what whether it like it I try and introduce like some sort of like almost like a gimmick or something, just something to take it like over the top, and then have that wow factor. I try and do it in a way where it's mended into the story, whether it's the timing or some of the props that they're using in the moment. So that's kind of my approach. And I also I also like to do like day twos, just because like the wedding day itself can be kind of limiting. You really only have so many hours and so many requirements that you have to meet throughout the day. So adding an extra day just gives you like more time to get the things that you want to get as like a director.
Yeah, awesome, man. So what would you say your ideal clients are? Like what are they like? Your perfect client, describe them to me.
I like clients that sort of trust the process. They've seen what I've done before, and they're just excited to see how I apply it to their story. And obviously couples that are madly in love with each other, that's always a bonus. I mean that's my ideal couple, like creative, trusting of the process, just sort of up for making this little piece of art as best as we can.
Yeah, for sure. So when you're shooting, like, describe kind of the shoot day for me. Would you describe yourself as a lot more mobile, or do you find yourself shooting like most of what happens, or just a few things that happen, or what? How does that look for you?
I mean, I definitely try and cover all the moving parts of the day, like all the standard stuff. But I try and think of I try and think of just little moments that I've sort of like gathered, like, and it's kind of like almost like a mental checklist that you develop over the years. And I'm sure you have it too. You show up to the prep location, and I'm sure like there's the things you need to get, but then there's the things that you want to get, and you kind of have to prioritize that as such. If you have the time to do it. But if you don't, sometimes you have to focus on just the bare minimum. Throughout the day, as I'm sort of as I'm shooting, I'm just kind of I'm thinking of like the creative like things that I can do creatively to, take the story in a certain direction, or whether it's like a cool transition from one scene to the next. I'm just kind of always trying to just, sprinkle in those little elements of like production value and all the thoughtful things.
Yeah, very cool. How long would you say it takes you to like do your edits? I feel like, man, when you were out in Colorado, I feel like there was a time where like you like delivered an edit back to me in like 2 days or something. It was insane. And I was like, oh man, like that's crazy. So is that still kind of how you're doing it, or have you changed kind of your the way you're editing, or I don't know what that looks for you a few years later, so.
I mean, like during that time, I was like, real hungry and real ready to just turn out whatever work I can and just be ready for the next project that came up. Back here, it's a little bit more relaxed. I mean, sometimes it'll take me a few weeks, or depending on, where I'm at with the season and how many I have backed up, it might take a few months. I've tried to slow my process down a little bit more. It was nice being able to just like get everything turned out, and in a business standpoint, like that's like the most efficient way of doing things. But I guess from like a personal standpoint, I guess you could argue that, did I give it the full attention it deserves, being, somebody's like wedding film, which is their, biggest moment of their life. They paid a lot of money for it. But to turn it out in a couple of days, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely like it, at the time, I gave it the most attention it deserved, and got it finished efficiently. But I guess now I sometimes sit on the edit a little bit more, and sometimes I'll be like a little bit more inspired after sitting with it for a few days. So there's been times where I turn it over to a client and then think about it a little bit more, and there's things you would have done differently. But yeah, I mean, now I kind of just try and focus on just getting it as good as I can, and then polishing it just a little bit further.
Yeah, that's a great point, man. Like I know exactly what you're saying when you say like if you sit with it for a little while, you'll start to see, like for me, it's like I start to see the things I don't like about it, about my edit if I hang on to it for a while, or like don't watch it for like a week and come back to it, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, I should really do this, and this to make this better. But when you're like right in the middle of it, sometimes you're kind of like blind to like the stuff that like is like should be done or whatever. And yeah, I'm usually too excited to send it out and get it over with. So I don't always, I it's pretty rare that I would actually sit on an edit for a week. Unless it's like the first couple weddings of the year, I don't want to, I'll usually have that done really quick. And I don't want it to seem like I have it done too quick. So sometimes I'll sit on it with those clients. But all right, man. Yeah. Well, that's very cool. So tell me a little bit about like the f your favorite video that you've done recently, if you have a favorite.
I think one of the favorite, like one of my most favorite ones that I've done, probably within the last year or two, was this one that I did for a couple who sort of like they wanted their theme to involve the Buffalo Bills, the football team, and they had talked to me and about it, and they said that they were actually planning on having their photography session on the field, and their wedding venue was like almost within walking distance, so it was real close. So with that, I just got a bunch of creative ideas, like just in our first meeting, And I went to school with the groom as well, so that was really cool to reconnect with him. But when they sort of you know, they said to me that they like what I do, they trust everything that I do, and they said, just, you know, be as creative as you want with it. And I took that literally, like, as far as I could, in every direction. I mean, even like with like the day two that we did, we waited 6 months after the wedding, just for the contrast of summer and winter and what that would look like in the film. So their wedding was in August, and then we shot the rest in, I think, December or January. That was kind of like a wedding where I, you know, since I knew that they wanted it to be creative, I kind of doubled down on everything. I actually invested some of my own money into props, and we kind of played out like a football scene. We had the groomsmen all lined up. We had the bridesmaids all lined up, and then we had the best man with football. He has the f I actually don't know like sport terms. I don't like follow any sports or anything.
That's okay.
So like the best man like gets the football, and then he throws it over to the groom, and then like the groom runs it to the end zone, and then
Dude,
is
I've
what.
got that pulled up right now on my computer and it's so good. So for everybody listening, you can go to heartboundlovestories.com and then search for Jennifer and Matt's video on there. And yeah, that shot is at like 3:35 in or something like that, 3:33, and it's a really cool shot. Yeah, really good stuff, man. I enjoyed that video, and very cool to see you be able to get access to. Is it called New Era Field?
I
Is that
think
the?
that's what it is now. Yeah,
Yeah,
yeah.
I couldn't or was I couldn't
It
remember the
was
name of it.
Ralph Wilson.
Okay. Yeah,
Yeah,
they're
back
always
in the day.
changing stadium names, but yeah, it's just really cool to see somebody actually get access to that kind of thing because, you know, especially with like pro sports and all that kind of stuff, you just don't really get to do that kind of stuff very often. So very, very cool, man. Yeah. Well, cool. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like what you're using to shoot your videos. Do you have like I mean, I think people always want to know, like, what camera are you on? I don't really want to spend a ton of time on that, but I guess tell us what cameras you're using or what you like to use, and then tell us about like any gimbals or anything that you're using that you especially like.
So I've been a Sony guy since the A7S. I think that was maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago now. I had the Sony A7S, then the A7S II, and now I'm with the A7 III. With how quickly Sony is, like, you know, implementing new technology, and then also listening to the feedback, you know, of the shooters and what they want. I just, you know, it just kind of seemed like a no-brainer to me, as far as like the lenses I used. You know, you never want to spend a ton of money on glass, but you know, that is the one thing that's going to make your picture look the way it is. So I got, you know, all Zeiss or G Master, and yeah, so I use that. I also, as of right now, I have the, what is it, the Ronin S? Is that like the single-handed one? Yeah, I have that, and that's been great.
How do you
That's
feel?
been.
Is it in your experience, like in terms of like everybody always complains, like, oh, these single hand gimbals are just like too heavy or whatever. What have you felt about that?
It is if you're not used to using it. And you kind of have to figure out what works for you. But generally, like, some like tips to keep in mind would be, like, if it does have the ability to put the spreadable feet on it, that gives you one more point of contact to hold the gimbal. Depending on what you're using, you might have that space already. But for some of them, it's kind of nice to stagger your grip, where you're actually holding it, you know, on the grip, and then again on the closed feet. As like the feet close down, it gives you like another 6 inches of metal to grab onto, and that can just give you a little bit more stability with that. And then also too, like, you know, if you're standing around, holding it out is not efficient, but holding it in towards your body, and then even taking the butt end of it and resting it like on your hip bone or on your belt, that takes the load off. And like, you can just, I mean, like, I don't even think about it anymore. It was like a huge issue at first. And I think it was for a lot of people with the Ronin S, because it was heavier. It's like a heavier single-handed gimbal. The extra feet on the bottom, holding it close to the body and, you know, resting it on yourself. It's all stuff that, you know, I think really helps, saves your body for, you know, the rest of the shoot.
Yeah, for sure. How much stuff are you shooting on gimbal versus like monopod or tripod? I usually like to quantify these in like a percentage, right?
Like I'm trying
my wedding video is like 50% gimbal or whatever.
I would say probably somewhere between 40-60 or 50-50, somewhere in there. I mean, maybe leaning a little bit more towards monopod. But
are you doing any handheld shots or anything like that?
The only time I'm doing handheld stuff usually is for the dances, or if there's any like creative reason for it to be handheld. Like if I do any like day two stuff, and it just like it would just feel more personable to just feel like you're in the room, and you know, you're moving around a little bit, and there's that shake and the imperfection. I'll choose it for certain reasons, but typically, like, my general rule of thumb is like just always shoot dance footage with I always go handheld. That's just my taste. And
And you, when you say dance footage, you mean you're talking like party dancing, like guests?
So the first dance, like, I'm almost always shoot that on the gimbal. And then at some point, you know, whether I have a second camera set up or a second shooter, whatever the case is, if I do get a moment where and I'll even check sometimes with the DJ too. You know, I'll ask him how long the length of the song is, if he plans on cutting it short, because sometimes they do that. If I can't afford to switch, you know, from the gimbal to the monopod, switch lenses quick, sometimes I'll do that too. And then, you know, punch in on my 85 and then get the, you know, all that.
Cool. What lens do you like to use when you're on the gimbal? Are you using like a prime lens on that?
I use a 16-35 F4. It's a Zeiss lens. It's not the G Master. It came before that. I use that most of the time. And then just based off of like the size and the weight of that lens, I have another one similar. It's a 35 prime, and that's a 1.4. I'll switch between those. Sometimes I'll put the 50 on, but that's a little bit bulkier. The nice thing about like the Ronin S is that it is like, there's room for error. So if you do throw a lens on and it's not perfectly balanced, it's strong enough where it can handle it. And that was something I wasn't able to do, with some of the other like cheaper gimbals I had. It had to be like perfectly set up, and this is almost like a little better, because you could be built for speed.
Yeah, that's super. I mean, it's just super important to be able to switch things around if you need to. And speed is always like, I'd say, the number one factor for me. So I watched this video that you did. It's Stephanie and Justin. I think it like 4 minutes and like 18 seconds or something like that. There's like this crazy 360 shot of them spraying champagne. tell me a little bit about how you did that. And I assume that must be like the GoPro on the lasso or something, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I just want to know, like, what was the setup for that and how did that work? Cause it looked really, really cool.
I saw this done before, a few years back. Somebody took a GoPro. Once the GoPro had 120 frames, the capability of that, and I think back in the day, I think it was only at maybe 720 or whatever it was. But they used it, and somebody figured out a way to attach it to a clothes hanger, attach it to string, and then attach that string to something that you hold, and then you whip it around your head as it picks up speed. And this is trial and error. I had to figure out my own build design that worked. As it picks up speed, it'll level out, and you'll see it. It kind of waves in the air, and then once it gets steady, you can instruct whoever's doing it to do their action. And for this one, I had the couple pop some champagne. And the idea with that is that you put it in slow motion, so it's going around at regular speed. As soon as she's about to pop the champagne, it slows down. You see the cork go flying. You see the spray, the champagne spraying everywhere. And I even told her, ahead of time, put your thumb over it, shake it, and aim it in the direction of where the camera is. And then you're basically seeing the camera cut right through that in slow motion. And it was just like a really cool epic shot, and I decided to use that right after they got married. And it's kind of like it's almost like a climax of the film. They're walking out, and then it goes right to the popping of champagne.
Yeah, man, it really is really cool. So when I'm thinking about a GoPro on a rope, all I can think is that GoPro is just going to point in some other random direction. So how did you get it to point in the right direction without blocking the field of view of the camera?
Because
you don't see the rope like in the shot at all, unless you like cropped some stuff out later or something.
Yeah. But. Yeah. Well, all of my, like pretty much almost everything I release is always with that, 2:35 ratio. So there's always like wiggle room, and you can always like recrop and hide stuff. But, I pretty much, hide the rope within that. I try and, get it the best I can. I'll actually shoot a test clip first. So I'll connect it and I'll stretch the rope out. And, the way I built it, it's actually like with a wooden coat hanger. So if you can picture that, and then, on the end of each of the, points, there's a hole, and then there's string that goes through it. And then like across, and then through the other hole, and then back to the other one, and then it's about maybe 6 or 7 feet away from the user, and that is connected to a it's kind of like a wheel bearing type thing without the wheel. It's like I think it's called like a caster or something like that, and that prevents the rope from tangling. So if you were to just hold the rope and keep doing that, it's like slowly, one rotation after the next, it's gonna knot up, and then it'll start to act funny. So with using a bearing or I think it's a caster, I tied to that, connected that to a handle, and then with that handle, I just you whip it around your head, you do it slow, and then you start to build momentum. I tried that a few times and I couldn't get it to stay steady. And then I actually had to add a wooden fin to it. So I got probably like a quarter inch piece of plywood, cut a little fin,
and then put that on there, and that actually helped keep it stable. And that was like the biggest like breakthrough was adding that.
Oh man, that is so intense sounding. You'll have to send what you should really do is make like a quick video about this thing for YouTube, because it really is cool, and I think you'll get a bunch of props from people for Duke going through all that effort and work to make it happen, because it did look really, really awesome. So
yeah, yeah.
How many people, like when you shoot a wedding, is it just you? Do you bring an assistant or two assistants, or how does that usually work for you?
That's all reflected in the packages. You know, I have single shooter packages, but as they go up, I'll have two, or even sometimes, you know, two and an assistant. But I guess it's all based off of the package.
Sure, that makes sense. And what about, like, so I know in a lot of your videos you have stuff that you're shooting on different days as well. Is that sort of just kind of depends on the package as well?
So with my packages, I have what I feel is generic coverage that everybody wants, all the, you know, the meat and potatoes. But then I have additionals, and those additionals can be selected based off of how many you access through the package that you get. So I have three packages, and then four additionals. The first package, you get one of those additionals. The second, you get two. And then the last one, you get all four. The additionals are an extra day shoot, drone coverage, a guest interview video that's usually done during the reception, during the dancing. And then the last one is like an Instagram bundle, a 1-minute trailer, a handful of videos, and then some stills.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome, man. What are your Instagram video? I mean, I'm sure you could just go check out your feed or whatever, but like, what, when you say a handful of Instagram videos, like, are you breaking them up into like segments, or like what are they getting there?
So they'll get like one 60 second trailer.
And that's just like, that's almost like a highlight, right? That's almost like,
Like a quick highlight, something to give them like a preview of everything. And that's also delivered a little bit, before I actually deliver the main film. And then also just random clips, that, you know, a sequence that's strung together that, makes sense to, you know, I'll take like the highlight film itself once I finish editing it, and then sort of like extract elements from that. And then even, you know, if it needs to further edit it a little bit more, I'll do that too.
Cool. As far as like color stuff, like what are you doing? Like what's your process for your color grades and stuff like that?
I wish I was better at it, and I almost wish that my camera was, I think if my camera had like 10 bit, I think I'd be more inclined to like learn coloring a little bit better.
I totally know what you mean, because like I'm still shooting on the Canon 5D Mark IV right now. I'm about to switch to the Blackmagic Pocket Cinema camera, but like using that super compressed video out of the Canon is just like it just, the image falls apart when you want to do that heavy grading.
I have different picture profiles that I use for different scenarios, but for like the wedding day, typically I don't want to be fiddling around with like crazy profiles and like having to keep track of that, and then if you have a second shooter telling them that. So I'll try and pick something that generally looks good, something that's a little bit flatter, but also where it's not like, you know, stepping into like S-log territory where you're losing ISO and then you need to use ND filters and stuff. I'll shoot with profiles that are a little bit more friendly in that regard. I'll shoot like a little bit flatter, and I kind of have like a two-step like coloring process, and it's like super basic, and I know I could be doing it better, but for my application, I think it works fine. I've been a fan of using LUTs. I have, you know, one LUT that I like in particular, and I use that on, you know, 90% of my stuff. The LUT will get you, you know, 70% where you want it. And then from there, I'll just do like a little fine adjustment with Lumetri color.
Yep.
And that's kind of it. I'll go through and apply the LUT first to just get a general feel. And then after I have everything set, I'll just go through clip by clip and then fine tune everything.
Very cool, man. Yeah, I think sometimes people will get like, it's weird. I feel like color grading is one of those things where people always kind of like get really intense about it. Like when you look at an online conversation about color grading, people just have like a million different opinions. And it's one of those areas of video where people just get like really intense and like, I don't know. My thing is like everybody's got their own style. So this idea that there's one specific way that you should be doing it, I don't really subscribe to that. I think it's really just comes down to what you think looks cool and do that. Right. So, but yeah, I like to know what people are doing, and I feel like color grading is one of those things where I know I'm not the best at it either. But I think you can still do quite a bit without having a lot of extra like tools and stuff. So
Are you still shooting like a compressed look? Like, is it like kind of like good to go out of the camera, or are you shooting a little bit more flat with your Mark IV?
So yeah, I actually just switched it up this last weekend. I did two weddings over the weekend, and as I get ready to transition to Blackmagic, I'm kind of like realizing like the Canons, like the DSLR stuff doesn't, especially like H.264 and all that kind of stuff, doesn't really like to be messed with all that much in terms of like boosting up shadows and like adding saturation and doing all these things. Like, you can do it to an extent, but like I said before, your image will start to fall apart the more adjustments you make to it. So once I start shooting like ProRes on the Blackmagic or whatever, then like the image holds up a lot better. Right now I'm trying to get it as close to where I want it right out of camera. That way I don't have to do too much, but I will say I always shoot contrast all the way down, just because I feel like it's too contrasty right out of the camera for me. So, I do always have that, and sharpness all the way down too on my Canon. I haven't really done a direct comparison, but people always say that your computer's way better at adding in sharpness, like post shooting versus doing it in camera. So I just try to trust people like Philip Bloom and people who've been doing this way longer than me, that they know what they're talking about. So,
I mean, it's become so like the picture just looks so crisp sometimes that, you know, it doesn't hurt to pedal that back sometimes and add it later. And you're almost like losing some of that stuff you don't want anyways.
Yeah. Like, I don't want things to look too sharp or too weird, you know?
It's almost, you become like detached from it.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's maybe this won't happen, but I think there's like a growing like portion of people who, after this new Blackmagic, after the Pocket 4K camera came out, there's some people who I think are like missing the look of the old Pocket camera. Because that camera has like this very creamy, I wouldn't say out of focus look, like everything looks in focus and it's great, but like it has this very unique style to it that feels very cinematic. And with the new one, it's still an awesome camera, but you can definitely see way more detail and stuff, and it doesn't have quite that same feeling. So I wonder if there's going to be a cult following of the old Pocket camera for that reason. But Yeah, man, I tend to agree with what you said about, you know, not wanting it to be too sharp and not being too detached. So I got a few more questions for you and we'll start to wrap this up, but
yeah, sure.
What you know, looking forward, you know, how many weddings do you really see yourself doing in a given year? Like, what do you have an ideal amount?
Right now, this past year, for what I have booked, I think I have somewhere around like 15. It's not a whole lot. A bunch of those came in sort of last minute, because I did some marketing a little later in the season. I probably should have been pushing my own like stuff, my own Instagram stuff, a little bit more. But I did notice that, you know, once I started pushing more Instagram content, I had a lot of people come to my stuff through there, and I had a lot of last minute people booking for this year. So that was kind of like a last ditch effort, and it seemed to work. So I got some random other weddings for 2020. But I mean, ideally, I don't think I would ever want anything more than 20 weddings a year. I could do more, but I think that I think my attitude would change towards it, and I don't want that to happen. I like, you know, the creative approach, and I like, you know, being able to like wholeheartedly go into a project and give it the time that it needs. And, you know, sometimes it makes sense to do that, and other times it doesn't make sense to do that. But in my mind, I just, you know, want to give the customer something really great. And, yeah, it's, I don't know. I've always been very, you know, competitive, and that goes, you know, against myself as well. I always want my work to be better than the last. And, yeah, so I'm just always trying to deliver good stuff and, you know, make people happy.
Yeah. So how do you, you know, you kind of mentioned the creativity aspect. How do you keep your creativity going when you're going to be shooting 20 a year? Like, what do you have any sort of tricks for that?
I just try and listen to what the couple says. Like when you talk to them up front, you get a good feel for who they are by, you know, asking questions of, you know, what they do, you know, as a couple, some of their interests as individuals, and just, you know, you can kind of get a feel for what that couple might be interested in doing. And then I just have, you know, sort of a mental list of, you know, places around the area that look really nice, places that I haven't been to and ideas that I haven't done yet. And I try and plug those in where I see them fit for the couple.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I think it can be really difficult when you're doing many, many weddings per year to view each one as something special and something unique, especially like the longer you do it. So having those kinds of, I don't know if they're like mental tricks or whatever, but ways to keep yourself engaged. And I think sometimes it just means, you know, sometimes scaling back a little bit. Like, you know, last year I did 36, I think. And this year I'm like, I don't want to do, it's still high, but I don't want to do more than 30. Because I'm like, yeah, I need just a little more time to like spread my workload around a little bit and do some like creative stuff, you know? So, having that extra like 2 or 3 days to work on an edit versus feeling like, you know what, I want to get this done in like 1 week and then move on to the next thing. So, all right, man. Well, awesome. Can you tell us where people can find you, look you up online, all that kind of stuff? Where can we find you?
So on Instagram, the channel is Heartbound Love Stories, HEARTBOUND, Love Stories.
Perfect.
And then also on, you know, the website is heartboundlovestories.com. Yeah, and if you want to check out my accordion stuff, that can be found on Instagram at squeeze and thanks, just like please and thanks. Squeeze and thanks.
Awesome, man. Yeah, if you guys gotta definitely check that stuff out. It's really entertaining stuff. Who worked on that video with you, man? 'Cause obviously you weren't shooting all that stuff yourself.
Yeah, I had my my buddy Jason Jurwitz help me out. He's another filmmaker here in Buffalo. Yeah, it was kind of like a last minute decision. He said that he was down to help out, and it turned out like so much better than I thought it would. To see like Jason's skills and like even his input, his creative input when we were shooting was really cool. And he's kind of been like now committed to helping me with this whole project. And then, in return, I help him with some of his stuff. And it's just nice to have that collaborative effort.
Very cool. Last question here. Who are some people that you look to for inspiration in terms of like wedding stuff? Are there any videographers out there that you really like that you think people should check out?
I actually probably the one guy that really stood out to me with his approach was actually somebody that you introduced to me, and that's Adam from Aflatus.
Yeah, yep. Adam Bradley.
Adam, when I met him and worked with him a little bit, and then even going back and seeing like some of the stuff he came up with the footage that we shot. He was definitely like a I don't know, like a breath of fresh air for as far as like that creativity and that rejuvenation in taking something that's like, it's so repetitive, like weekend after weekend, it's a different place each weekend, but it does become repetitive, and to be able to infuse it with creativity was something that prevented me from burning out with it, because I've been doing it for over a decade, and there comes a point where it's just like, ah, what more can I do? Like for me at least, I mean, like I said, I always want to make the production better and better. So doing that to do that just meant becoming more creative with it. So Adam showed me some cool stuff, and even just following him after I moved back. He's got some really cool ideas.
Yeah, Adam's awesome. I mean, you guys can check out his work too at afweddings.tv. Well, Denny, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show today and helping people out with your insight and telling us all about what you do and your approach and all that stuff. It's good to hear from other videographers. This is one of those industries, I think, where we're all out at our separate weddings every weekend and doing our own thing most of the time. So we don't always get to hear from other people. So yeah, man, it's really good to sit down with you and have this conversation. So definitely appreciate you taking the time today, and we'll have to do it again.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
All right, guys, that was my interview with Denny Kremblis of Heartbound Love Stories, based in Buffalo, New York. Go ahead and give Denny a follow online. Look him up, send him a message, ask him questions. He's a really nice guy and is happy to help you guys with anything you have questions about. So like I said in the beginning of the podcast, if you haven't rated or subscribed or left a review for this podcast, please do so. It helps out the show a ton. And I spend a decent amount of time putting this show together, setting up interviews and such. And all I ask in return is that you just simply take 5 minutes out of your day and just leave a nice rating and review for the show. It means the world to me. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show today and every week. Really appreciate it. Next week, I've got an awesome interview with Jeff from A Little Long Distance, and I can't wait for it. So stay tuned.